I think that just as we're living in a nuclear age, we have grown so tremendously in scientific knowledge, it doesn't seem too much to say that men can begin to awaken to the fact that they haven't grown enough spiritually and haven't recognized their spiritual capacities.
Once something like eating is death, then you've struck at the very heart of life. The enemy of the older radical theories may have been the ruling class. But today the stakes of whether we will reform ourselves into a new kind of human being, a new kind of society, whether we will find selves worth being, the stakes of it are simply life itself.
Political Philosophy is a Morin Academy program. To get more information about the Morin Academy, you can look at the show notes below. We have a Patreon, and we would very much appreciate you supporting us there, and you'll get all of our content, either recorded or recorded and live. It's a good deal, and I really urge you to take a look at that. Also, most of our events can be gotten for a single donation on Eventbrite. There will be more news coming soon about some changes in our programming for next year that we hope you'll like, but I'm going to keep it a secret for now. All right, so it's been a while because a lot of things have been going on at the Morin Academy, but I was in the series on Aristotle's ethics, and particularly on the topic of political friendship, when I broke off about a month ago. And so I want to get back into that. And we've laid a lot of groundwork talking about virtue, what Aristotle thinks of various relationships in of friendship amongst individuals. Now I want to squarely look at political friendship. So you can see Aristotle's heritage from Plato in how he deals with the relationship between individual and group social relationships and political relationships. Just like in Plato's Republic, he goes back and forth. He sort of treats the friendship amongst individuals as analogical to the type of relationships that can exist at the political level. So this is why he goes back and forth, just like Plato does, especially in Republic Book 8, if you're interested. Now, you know, here he says things like kingship is kind of like parental friendship, you know, in which one is superior to the other, but it's a relationship of love and support and tutelage. Aristocracy, he says, is like marital friendship. And if you actually look at what Aristotle has to say about marital friendship, it's kind of eye-opening because you may have just learned about Aristotle's supposed sexism. You know, we do have to realize we're talking about somebody from ancient Greece. But if you take a look at it, he says things like, you know, the relationship between the husband and wife is like aristocracy when both have virtue, and, you know, everyone is different, but it can become a very good type of friendship and partnership between two relative equals, with one doing some things better and the other doing some things better. And we know that Aristotle thinks men in general are better at leadership. And but he talks about timocracy, which in the Republic is more like military rule. But what they have in common with Aristotle's notion of timocracy is that it is a friendship, a sort of like a citizenship amongst equals in honor. And, you know, those who have honor should rule equally. And so he says timocracy is like friendship amongst brothers in which there is equal virtue. So what we see is this notion that there are natural relationships amongst human beings, like the parental and the marital and the friendship amongst brothers. And these are relationships that should be of justice and virtue. They can't be friendship without justice, because justice, remember, is doing to others what they more or less what they deserve, right? What is good for them. which does vary from person to person and from rank to rank. But he says that, you know, like friendship is justice in that regard, or is it a species of justice? And friendship of the most genuine kind can't exist without people of equal virtue. And so we see these natural relationships, which hopefully are true friendships of justice and virtue, occur in families and analogously in some governments, right? So there we have kind of like the ideal coming out of, you know, what it would take to have a political system that would work the way Aristotle would prefer. Ideally, you want one in which, you know, the government is run on the basis of relationships of mutual regard and virtue that are like friendships. But there is a difference between the relationships amongst individuals and the political friendship. Why should we care about this? Obviously, we have a huge problem with citizenship in the United States, and it seems like in many other places in the world, but, you know, like I can speak for the United States, we have a huge problem. You know, we are so far from friendship amongst citizens, friendship, that it just boggles and defies the imagination. We've really gone to the far other end of the extreme. So Aristotle is pointing to something very different from what we know now as, quote, citizenship, which typically amounts in America today to voting and, you know, griping, complaining, attacking, and demonizing in the meantime, in between opportunities to vote. Anyway, you know, for those of us who kind of want to refine our tastes and improve ourselves, Aristotle is one of the sources we can turn to. In fact, that's probably the chief benefit of studying things like this, is that not that everything that any one of these thinkers says is just 100% accurate, but that it elevates our tastes and our sensibilities and points our mind in the direction of something better. So when Aristotle talks about friendship among citizens, it is an ideal that we ought to contemplate. And by thinking about it and thinking about what he says, hopefully we can begin to, you know, extricate ourselves, at least as individuals, from this mire of useless behavior and activity that we've gotten ourselves into. So he says the friendship of citizens, tribesmen, voyagers, and such like are more like friendships, more like friendships in a community, since they appear to reflect some sort of agreement. And among these, we may include the friendship of host and guest. Okay, so the difference there that he's trying to get at between, say, the familial relationship and the political relationship, even though both can be friendship, is that, you know, you don't agree to be, in particular, you don't agree to be somebody's child. And even in the marriage partnership, you know, what is the agreement? It's an agreement based on the heart, or maybe back then more on like social status might have been arranged, right? But it probably was not based, and primarily is not based on just, you know, reasonable agreement, right? So the difference with the political relationship and friendship is that it is based upon agreement, much like the relation. That's why he says much like the friendship between host and guest, right? Because in order to welcome somebody into your home, you have to agree. What will the conditions be? How long will they stay? And this and that. Obviously, the citizen hopefully stays forever, but the attitude is the same. You have to regard this other person. You're not taking them for granted in any way, right? So something about citizenship in a country makes it imperative that people be in agreement at that level. He says the person who benefits the common good in such citizen friendships should receive more honor. So here he injects this element of honor, particularly in this political sense, right? That in a political system of friendship in which people can respect each other and listen to each other, there will be some who are more virtuous than others, who give more than others. And they should be honored. And so he introduces this idea of reciprocity within the citizenship relationship. Reciprocity does not always mean that we give equally. In fact, it can mean that we give unequally. We give unequal things to those who are unequal. That sounds harsh, but I don't mean it that way, right? That there are some people who display amazing heroism or give their entire life to helping people or to leading in a virtuous way. And they should be honored by the citizens, the rest of the citizens, more so. And that creates the reciprocal relationship. On the one hand, the sort of heroic citizen benefiting the common good greatly, and then the rest of us giving them not money, but honor, right? In fact, Aristotle just flat out says, if a person goes into leadership positions in order to receive bribes or, you know, profits, then they cannot be honorable. They cannot receive honor. Instead, they've received money for their work, which is another kind of reciprocity, but it's lower. It's lower, and a society shouldn't encourage it. So here we have one of those, you know, golden chunks of wisdom that reflects on our own society. We are so confused about what even the common good is, let alone who is honorable and admirable. You know, the idea of what character is and how to judge it, we're very confused about it, right? For Aristotle, it was pretty clear, you know, I won't go into all the details, but the basics are, you know, the common good rests in things like safety, relative, you know, stability, the ability of citizens to improve themselves and to achieve full human flourishing. By the way, if you hear that racket over there, it's my incessantly active cat. But anyway, so, you know, we ought to be able to recognize what the common good is at that very basic level, but we're not focused on that. And we're focusing at this sort of ideological level, where there probably can never be complete agreement. All right. So anyway, Aristotle helps us to refocus and contemplate what that would be like. So giving honor to virtuous people in a political system of rough equals citizens is actually reciprocity, and it is a type of justice. This one has transgressed too much and is now heading towards the cat room. Okay, so he says, clearly, not everything should be given to the same person, and usually we should return favors rather than do favors for our companions, just as we should return a loan to a creditor rather than lend to a companion. Again, on the surface, it sounds a little harsh, right? And he does, I want to soften this a little bit by saying that he has another category for generosity and basically giving it to people with generosity and openness of heart and without the expectation of the same type of return. But the return would be respect and gratitude and honor in that case. But when it comes to our fellow citizens, especially if we're living in some sort of democratic setting, okay, then the favors that you do to them, the help that you provide them, you should expect a return, right? A return of the same, that, you know, when you need help, when you need, you know, something, that you will also be helped. Now, this is where, you know, I think in our particular kind of economy, we run into major problems with this, right? Because even though we're all supposedly equal citizens, at least at the most fundamental level, we can all vote, we all have a right to speak and so on. At the same time, Some of us have so little and others have so much in the way of money, right? That it's hard for those with little money to be able to reciprocate even with honor, right? Because their experience of life is so much so different from others that there's likely to be more resentment than appreciation or regard, and even anger, right? Because we don't have a system in which people who have little money can still be regarded by others who have more as equally useful and valuable for the society. If we could somehow find a way to have people at various levels of income contribute to the well-being of others, right? To remove money from the equation, we would be closer to being able to have like true citizen friendship. But not only would we have to do something about the money relationship, but we'd have to do something about our attitude, right? Because those who have more or are considered to be of a higher status in our society have been sort of conditioned to think of those who have less money as less in other ways, less talented, less virtuous, you know, surely, right? You know what I'm talking about. But those connections are false. There's no necessary connection between how much money people make, or, you know, what kind of lifestyle they can afford and their character. Although the more that we emphasize that people who have less probably also have a bad character or are lazy or just take, et cetera, while we give them no opportunities to not take, but to give, right? Like outside of their own families anyway, we basically have set up the situation in which it's difficult for parties on both sides of that divide to be able to see the other as just a human being, equal in many regards, and equally valuable to society, equally able to be reciprocal. Okay, so I would say, you know, the capitalist economy interjected here in between this ancient advice and now makes things even more difficult than it would have been back then. Oh yes, surely there were, of course, there were many more poor in that society than there were wealthy. And so to a certain extent, there was the same thing. However, the capitalist economy, as we experience it now, literally makes money really the only thing that you can act with, you know, outside of your family structure. The fact that in previous times people could, at least within their own circles, right, and within their own community, directly produce things and do things of value, even if they weren't being given money for them, probably opened up more capabilities for reciprocity. And so this is what I'm trying to get at when I say if we could remove the money economy, then we could see our fellow citizen who is poor, but knows some things or could do some work or could, you know, trade some sort of favor with us as a valuable member of the community, right? And on top of that layer, you could still have the friendships of mutual regard and honor and, you know, different levels of status within society. But you see how things would change if the people at the top were thinking about how they would be regarded by those at the bottom. And not only that, but how they would be treated by them, you know? now, I think in a lot of cases, the wealthier people are, the less they even really fully see the other people and acknowledge their existence. Now, Aristotle says if people simply start using each other in friendships, citizen or otherwise, the friendship may need to be severed. But first, attempts should be made to set people right. And I think this points in the direction of our, you know, systems of education and raising people, that people should be raised and educated to understand what's required of them and what a virtuous and good and decent person and citizen are, and then to assume for the most part that they know this, and that when they deviate from behavior, that the from this behavior, that the first thing that you ought to try is to, as he says, more or less correct them or set them right, not by attacking them, but by, you know, coming alongside them and saying, why are you acting this way? But this requires the society to have strong norms, right, about right behavior. In order to teach them, you'd have to have norms of right behavior that everybody could more or less feel good about. We are not there. We are so divided. We have very, very different views about what even goodness and right behavior are. I think that we really need to think about, again, the basics of what it takes for human beings to even live and survive together in relative peace, right? And obviously, liberalism was an attempt to figure that out. And as we can see, it did to a certain extent help, but it doesn't actually lead to concord. It really does lead to discord, and past a certain point, then it is not good enough. So I've already used the term, but, you know, concord is where he turns. That's his word for, you know, the political friendship that he's aiming at. He says, now, concord also appears to be a feature of friendship. Hence, it is not merely sharing a belief, since this might happen among people who do not even know each other. Nor are people said to be in concord or accord when they agree about just anything, like on astronomical questions, since concord on these questions is not a feature of friendship. Rather, a city is said to be in concord when its citizens agree about what is advantageous, make the same decision, and act on their common resolution. That's exactly what I've been trying to say in a nutshell, right? When its citizens agree about what is advantageous, and that's where I think we need to think at the basic level. Do we want peace? Do we want happiness? Do we want the human flourishing of everyone to be able to grow and develop to the maximum extent they can? Do we want love? Do we want safety? Do we want peace of mind, mental health? Do we want relative prosperity? Not just for some, but for all. If we want these things, then we need to start thinking about those things at a very practical level so that we can find agreement. So that we can find agreement and come to a common resolution. I'm afraid that we're going to be so divided that we will lose all of the basic good things that keep a society going and healthy, and that we're well on our way to losing them. And, you know, Aristotle's ancient wisdom is saying, you know, look, even more so than these liberal philosophers, I would say, let's think about not just survival, although that would probably be useful at this point with, you know, all the things facing us, including climate change. But let's think instead about what it takes to move beyond survival to a good life, you know, of human flourishing, of excellence, of happiness, right? These things shouldn't be off the table. You know, people shrug and say, oh, that could never happen. Why not? We're sending people into space. We've created artificial intelligence. I mean, but we can't possibly figure out what's good for us and come to some sort of basic agreement. And people fantasize about the use of AI to finally do it for us. You know, what kind of situation is this where the people who create AI can't figure out how to come to basic agreements about, even within a country, we won't even talk about the international level, but just within a country, even within a smaller community, to be able to come to an agreement about the basics and then to know how to foster actual citizen friendship rather than animosity. So I want to leave you with this. There's a long quote that I thought really kind of like will help with the clarification of thought, as Peter Morin said, our clarification of thought concerning citizen friendship. He says, "Concord is apparently political friendship, as indeed it is said to be, for it is concerned with advantage and with what affects life as a whole." Okay, what affects life as a whole? This sort of concord is found in decent people, for they are in concord with themselves and with each other, since they are practically of the same mind, for their wishes are stable, not flowing back and forth like a tidal strait. They wish for what is just and advantageous, and also they seek it in common. Okay, that sounds so wildly ideal at this point. Isn't it a crazy world to live in where that sounds too wild, you know? Not flowing back and forth like a tidal strait, but stable. Trying to achieve the same mind. Seeking what is just and advantageous for all people. And seeking it in common. And then he says, base people, which is bad people, okay? Those who are not worthy and are not capable of political friendship. He says, base people cannot be in concord except to a small extent, just as they can be friends only to a small extent, for they are greedy for more benefits and shirk labors and public services. And since each wishes this for himself, he interrogates and obstructs his neighbor. And when people do not look out for the common good, it is ruined. The result is that they are in conflict, trying to compel each other to do what is just, but not wishing to do it themselves. Aha. Yes. And you know, when you think about the divide between the red and the blue in this country, it is exactly, you know, it's very simply diagnosed even by Aristotle here. They try to compel each other to do what is just, but they do not wish to do it themselves on either side, because we have been trained to be selfish, atomistic individuals and to not think in terms of the common good. And the common good is what is going to keep us alive and thriving on this planet. So do we want to continue to be base people? Unworthy of real friendship, lacking in virtue, incapable of self-control, incapable of keeping our minds on the basic common goods of human life and happiness? Or do we want to try to achieve political friendship? If we want to try to achieve political friendship, it starts with us, each one of us, to be able to turn off your social media. At least as far as like either listening to vitriol or dishing it out. It doesn't get us anywhere except for deeper in a hole. And then to reach out to somebody that you find obnoxious, probably your neighbor or a member of your own family, and decide you're going to tolerate them. It's a liberal value, but a decent one. Tolerance comes first, and then hopefully listening enough and becoming forbearing and realizing that on top of all this ideological baggage is another human being. And the more that you're around and deal with this other human being, the more you're going to get used to them and value them for something more than their politics. Anyway, It's a tough order, but all we can do is try to improve ourselves. Truly, that's got to be the first step. If we can't even improve ourselves, well, we can't do anything else. All right. So Aristotle has some wisdom for us. among many other political thinkers, dealing with this issue of how to get past the self-defeating, self-destructive political behavior of most people.